Hello, welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. I am Matt Harmon. I'm joined by my stat nerd partner in crime, Dalton Del Don. And Dalton, buddy, I don't know how much time we have for pleasantries here, because this podcast could be like 2 hours long, because there has been a ton of stuff going on in the NFL world. But anyways, let's have a little pleasantry here. How you doing, fella? How you doing?
Doing well, and you're not joking. Football just never sleeps. I'm really into baseball, but it's just year-round the NFL. I mean, just wild, you know, franchise quarterbacks getting traded, Tom Brady out of retirement. Yeah, crazy stuff.
Yeah, literally, it's like, okay, MLB, you had your little lockout, and boom, NFL news. It's time to set the March Madness bracket thing. All the what do they call that damn day, whatever. Boom, Tom Brady comes out of retirement. You know, it's like the NFL... You could say never sleeps. You could say never shuts the hell up. But you know what? It keeps the lights on. So I'm here for it. It's been a wild time. Let's jump right into it. Right off the top here, we both have said it already. Tom Brady's, he says he has unfinished business. I'm not even calling it a retirement. I'm calling it an extended vacation that he took for about 40 days away from the NFL. So Tom Brady is back. And we saw the ramifications of this right away, basically, when Ryan Jensen took less money than what he probably would have got on the open market, their star center, to come back to Tampa Bay. You know, Carlton Davis, you know, I don't know what kind of crazy mafia accounting they're doing down there in Tampa to keep all these guys, but they're bringing players back primarily because I think, look, you go from a team that is potentially about to be quarterbacked by, like, people are out there embarrassing themselves talking about, like, well, what if Blaine Gabbert is the week one starting quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, before Kyle Trask is ready to take over. You go from that to now Tom Brady's back in an NFC that is beyond the Packers and Rams pretty wide open.
Yeah, so Bill Simmons kept hinting that Brady wasn't finished. It makes more sense to do this now than taking a year off at his age. There are rumors circulating that Brady spent the last 2 to 3 weeks feeling out our 49ers, my apologies, yeah. They're in, his interest there, you know, to come home. That's where he's from. So there really was legit interest there before he went to Tampa Bay. So anyways, back in Tampa Bay, there's a controversy in Vegas. Someone made a big bet on their futures. They went from 60-1, you know, down to 7-1. Obviously, this increases the fantasy value of Mike Evans. Now, how soon will Chris Godwin return from injury? Gronk will probably re-sign. Fournette even went from taking away the Bucks stuff on his social media to re-putting it back on. So he'll probably
Actually sent out like a goodbye tweet or whatever to Tampa Bay, because kind of reading the writing on the wall with their salary cap situation, you know, again, heading into like a Kyle Trask potential situation there. He's like, goodbye, Tampa Bay. See what's up. And then boom, Brady's back, deletes the tweet. Like, so yeah, I think we could see Fournette back as of, like, just off the top. By the way, we're recording this at just right around 4 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, March 15th. So anything that breaks after the next hour or so, we're not going to talk about on the show. But yeah, as of right now, Fournette's not back there. You talked about Mike Evans. I'll get to Russell Gage in a second, because he's the kind of one offensive playmaker that they've added to this mix so far. But you know, I wrote in the recap piece to this, as of now, Gronk is not back, but I expect Gronk to come back at some point too. It just makes, you know, his Joe Burrow like musings were cute at one point, but I think we'll probably see Gronk back with Tampa Bay. Mike Evans, you know, with Chris Godwin banged up entering this year, you know, Antonio Brown gone, Mike Evans could be a guy who's in line for a top 10 wide receiver season, and I don't know if he'll be drafted that way, but I think he really should be.
100% with his with the Brady news, I moved Evans all the way to number 10. He's back in top 10. You could even argue up as high as number 7. Actually, frankly, I think he's right there in that argument, right after the big, you know, the Tariq Hill, Chase, Jefferson, that group, right there with now CeeDee Lamb, which we'll talk about too, because he's definitely in the group now with those targets opening up in Dallas. But yeah, with Godwin come back, Brady, Evans is a top 10 option once again. So yeah, it was massive. Yeah, they brought back Carlton Davis, as you said, Russell Gage. So yeah, their team is all in. It's funny. Funnily, the person may not return is Bruce Arians, our coach. That's still up in the air. But yeah, they're bringing the band back together. Okay. All right. You think so? All right. Well,
I think so. But
Simmons
we'll
did hint that he might be out. But either way, big news for Evans. I agree. That's the biggest news fantasy. And Fournette. With the hobbled Godwin, because he suffered that injury so late in the year. Evans is just, he's off to a historical start to his career as far as wide receivers. And he's set up for a big, big campaign next year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think he could have top 5 upside, you know, 20 plus touchdowns the last 2 years. Him and Brady have unbelievable chemistry. Talk to Mike Evans about this during Super Bowl week. Like, I think Evans is still somehow, even entering his age 29 season, is still a really underrated player. I think he's at 109 and 114 targets the last 2 years. Give me the over on both of those numbers for this coming season with Godwin banged up. But I do want to talk about Russell Gage. They signed him just a couple of hours ago. I haven't seen the contract details on this one yet, but dude, Russell Gage is kind of good, man. He's a player who popped up a little bit for the Falcons to end last year. I can't believe the Falcons. I know they have no money. They're pretty cap strapped right now. They've got a lot of problems on their books, but I have no idea who the F is playing wide receiver for the Falcons this year. But Russell Gage, pretty good separator, gets open versus man coverage, you know, gets open in the short to intermediate areas, can play X, Z, and a slot receiver. Like, he can move all around the formation, and, you know, also really, really tough at the contested catch point too. You know, this is a guy who made his bones on special teams, but is a pretty athletic player who is just kind of now starting over the last couple of years to get some reps at wide receiver. He was one of the biggest surprises for me going back and watching him last year. I think he's a legit good player, and I love this fit as the number three, and, you know, depending on Godwin's status to start the year, you know, could even potentially be like a 2B, 2 or a 2A receiver there alongside Chris Godwin as he gets back up to form. He's the guy that I think I'll be trying to get in later rounds, you know, in that sort of like, he's not Antonio Brown, of course. Brown is still like playing like a top 10 receiver in the NFL, even though, you know, he's probably not, I think he's probably done in the NFL, but Gage is legit good and a bona fide sleeper for next year for sure.
Yeah, me too. I agree. I've repeatedly heard similar views with his tape and his big improvement in contested catch ability. Again, Godwin suffered that injury late, and Brady perennially is among the league leaders, if not the league leader, in end zone targets. I mean, it's just money for fantasy value for his pass catchers. So, yeah, Russell Gage was impressive, and now he's going to be a nice opportunity with Tom Brady throwing him the ball. So, yeah, I'm in on him.
And we shall see what happens with Fournette, these running backs. If Fournette does sign elsewhere, you know, then they could be looking at a potential rookie back there. But we'll see, you know, some of these pass catching backs, like, you know, we'll talk about them going throughout the program here, but they've signed elsewhere. So we'll see what happens.
Keyshawn Vaughn was competent enough in the postseason. I mean, he would become a more than even a sleeper if both Ronald Jones and Fournette left.
Yeah, until they, again, they draft like another guy in the third round. And So, I mean, we'll see what happens, but I think, and if I'm Leonard Fournette, bro, I'm like getting back to, he had over 1,200 total yards last year in 14 games, was third among running backs and catches. Like, I think he would be smart to head back there, but totally. I don't think anyone's going to blow him away with a big contract. Big contract. Speaking of big contracts, speaking of wide receivers, Amari Cooper, his big ass contract, sort of at this point, like, it actually doesn't look that bad considering some of the other ones we've seen on the market. He was traded from the Dallas Cowboys to the Cleveland Browns. They swapped 6-round picks, and they get a 5th-round pick, due to the Dallas Cowboys, for Amari Cooper. When the reports got leaked that they were going to release Amari Cooper, I was like, man, somebody should just throw a day 3 pick at them, you know, because clearly they want this contract off the books, due to the Dallas Cowboys. They kind of signal, hey, we're going to cut him, and he fetches a 5th-round pick. Now, I think Amari Cooper is not a number one receiver. I think he's actually probably one of, if not the most overrated receivers in the NFL. But that's my personal opinion about the player. This move is great for Cleveland because their wide receiver depth chart is terrible. But I get where Dallas is coming from, especially on the back of then extending Michael Gallup. But what was your reaction to the Amari Cooper trade?
And I don't know how true it is, but reportedly Cooper and Dak got into it in the locker room after the loss to the 49ers in the playoffs. But I instinctively lowered Cooper in my fantasy rankings with the move. But the more I think about it, you know, going outdoors, obviously the downgrade at quarterback. But how much was the accuracy issue with Mayfield last year with the left shoulder injury? Will Deshaun Watson be the QB there? And he should soak up all the targets in Cleveland. So I don't know. What do you think? Is it a downgrade, upgrade, neutral move for Cooper himself's fantasy value?
I would say that if Cooper had been back in Dallas this year, which you're right, like basically from the moment the 49ers game ended, it seemed like this divorce was coming. That was ironically like one of the first few things on Jerry Jones's mind after this game was like, hey man, I'm pretty disappointed with Amari Cooper, but this is the second team that has soured on the Amari Cooper experience, which I think goes to prove my point that he's not like the league clearly doesn't view him as like a bona fide number one receiver. I do not either, but he's going to be the number one target for the Browns. I would say that if he had been back on the Dallas Cowboys, I'd have probably had him in like the low teens, early 20s, because I think he's a player that's kind of, you know, is what he is at this point, where I think CeeDee Lamb has a chance to continue to ascend. And I kind of feel like he'll be in the low teens, early 20s for me at wide receiver on the Browns. They're a team that's definitely not done at wide receiver. You know, I don't know if they'll sign another big ticket guy on the market, but they certainly will. I expect them to draft somebody, even if they are one of the most run heavy teams in the NFL. Like, you can't be going out there with like Amari Cooper and then like Donovan Peoples-Jones and all these goofballs behind them, even if they did bring back David.
Even if Njoku's back. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I think it's kind of like a maybe lateral move, you know, less efficiency, but more volume. He's just not a guy that's ever, you know, commanded a ton of targets. And I think there's a reason for that.
I think that's right. I lowered him too much originally. I think it's a neutral move. He should fall around the area. It looks like his ECR in Fantasy Pros is a wide receiver 24. That sounds about right to me. You can, you know, give or take three or four spots either way.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I would like him. This is such, you know, classic crutch analysis, but I would like him a lot in best ball because I think he's going to have big games. You know, I think he could have been used more as a deep threat in the Dallas Cowboys offense. I think, you know, some of these vertical shots on play action will be really nice in the Browns offense. But again, it's Baker Mayfield. Like, if he's back, it's a lot of questions for Amari Cooper. And again, this is his third team. Wide receivers changing teams typically isn't great unless you're like Steph Diggs or unless, you know, you're DeAndre Hopkins or something like that. And Amari Cooper is 100% not either of those players. So we'll see. Let's flip this back to Dallas, though. Obviously, they lose Cedric Wilson to the Dolphins. He signs a 3-year deal there. They extend Michael Gallup on maybe the most team-friendly contract in freaking NFL history. I love Gallup. Like, if you're getting a 50% discount from Cooper to Gallup, like, that's a huge all the way for Michael Gallup in that one, because he's not 50% less of a player than Amari Cooper. Obviously, he's coming off a late season ACL. I think that's why the Cowboys had the leverage here. But listen, is this not just like wheels all the way up for CeeDee Lamb or what?
I was so disappointed in his, you know, production last year, but yes, all the way up for Lamb. I mean, they were among the league leaders in pass attempts. Dak Prescott did not run as much since suffering the injury. Blake Jarwin suffered some crazy hip injury that he's not going to be ready for the start of the season. I mean, after Gallup,
they cut him with the injury designation.
Oh,
right?
He's totally cut. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they'll bring back Schultz, but then after Gallup, who may not even be ready in September, it's Noah Brown, Malik Turner. I mean, it's also a little bit of a bump for my guy Tony Pollard, who I'm threatening to rank higher outright than Ezekiel Elliott this year, but I see some more targets there. But CeeDee Lamb is right there in the conversation after that big five. He's number six on my board now, and you could, you know, he's a second round fantasy pick with all these targets opening up in Dallas.
Yeah, there was a lot of kind of stupid angst about CeeDee Lamb's season in like dynasty circles this year. Like, maybe he's not a bona fide dynasty wide receiver one or something like that. There's a lot of that weird talk out there. Dude, CeeDee Lamb's a baller. And I mean, sharing targets with a lot of really good players there. You know, Cooper, I feel like I said a lot of negative things about him there, but he's like, I think he's one of the best number two receivers in the NFL. Like, a guy who's going to command a lot of volume there as well, even if he's not going to be like a target hog type of receiver. CeeDee Lamb, I think, can be a target hog type of receiver if it's like him and a collection of guys around him. And then whenever Michael Gallup, who I think is as good as Amari Cooper, but again, if it's Gallup and CeeDee Lamb, like, boom, now we're talking at this point for CeeDee Lamb to get a ton of volume. I agree with you. Wide receiver six sounds right to me.
With no Cedric Wilson, let him eat out of the slot a little more too. I like
Yeah. And I think Lamb could be a guy that they use on the interior. They could use him outside. Like, he'll just probably play, you know, 98% of the snaps this year. I think he could be one of those type of receivers. So it is wheels up for him. I think losing Amari Cooper, it's probably just better for all sides. Like, for everyone's fantasy value, I think it's better that Cooper is gone. It's probably better for Cooper to be, you know, somewhere that they actually want him there or whatever, but we'll see. It's a great deal for the Browns to take on. They could get out of this deal after 1 year because there's no more guaranteed money if Cooper doesn't, like, you know, blow the doors off or whatever. But you mentioned Deshaun Watson. We got to talk about Deshaun Watson. Listen, you know the deal with like the criminal proceeding. He wasn't indicted by the grand jury. You know, even though I feel like I've heard 300 people say the line about, you know, I've heard a grand jury will indict a ham sandwich if they could. Everybody that is even tangentially related to law in my friend group has told me that joke. I'm like, that's great. Well, okay. Well, Deshaun Watson did not get indicted by the grand jury. So it seems like this has set off, you know, the bidding war for Deshaun Watson. Now, obviously, whatever you think about it, I don't know. It feels gross to kind of talk about the whole Deshaun Watson thing like right now still, but this is where we're at with it. It sounds like teams like the Falcons, the Browns, the Panthers, and the Saints, basically everybody in the NFC South except the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, are potentially about to get in a big bidding war for Deshaun Watson now.
Yeah, it's also weird that teams are in, they're courting him, and he's even rejecting, like, Seattle apparently outright even a meeting, and he might even be suspended for an undetermined amount of time.
Right.
But Deshaun Watson on the field, the last time we saw him, was absolutely one of the three best players in football. 8.9 YPA, crazy TD to INT ratio. There was no DeAndre Hopkins. He was facing a tough schedule with no one around him, bad infrastructure, head coach. I think they ran the ball like first and 10, crazy amount too.
Yeah.
I mean, Deshaun Watson is, I mean, we talk just the player only. Fantasy obviously is great, but real life, I mean, he's 7 years younger than Russell Wilson. I mean, he's, yeah, it makes sense why teams are lining up to get him, the player. So yeah, it's going to be humongous. I mean, I'm in a slow draft best ball, and it's all about, yeah, Deshaun Watson is going to make the difference of all these players' fantasy values, where he ends up just dramatically. I mean, he could end up in Atlanta with Allen Robinson as his number one. I mean, there's so many different, you know, permutations here, but as a Niners fan, I'd love him to go to the Browns. Please stay in the AFC.
The AFC's got enough quarterbacks at this point, right? The NFC needs some help bad in terms of the quarterback landscape. But yeah, I mean, he's a 26-year-old quarterback. Didn't obviously play football at all last year. Was basically just paid to stay on the inactive list for the Houston Texans, as neither side wanted much to do with the other. You're right. The fact that he has a no-trade clause has made this like a bit, you know, it's made it a whole big thing. Like, they can't just send him to the highest bidder. Deshaun has to approve this whole thing. And yeah, I expect a suspension to come. You know, we've seen, even if guys don't get in criminal trouble, I'm thinking about like Ben Roethlisberger, Ezekiel Elliott, these guys who have had off the field trouble, you know, not the same thing that Deshaun has gotten himself into, but, you know, of similar branches of the tree or whatever. No criminal charges in those cases, but they were suspended, I think, six games for Roethlisberger and six games for Zeke. So I feel like 6 to 8 games is you should be expecting that for Watson next year.
Yeah, because Watson has a huge, you know, civil cases coming his way. Yes. The only counter one would have is that they could just say time served and he missed all of last year. But yes, I would personally expect further, because as you mentioned earlier, yeah, these are gross allegations. I mean, it's gross stuff. So yes, I would still expect some sort of suspension. But, you know, I mean, so yeah, I mean, I don't, we will know more once we see his landing spot. But yes, I'm with you. If I had to bet, I would guess there is more games to be missed for Watson.
100%. The Falcons is a really interesting one, because apparently he's from close to home, basically, for him to be going back there. So there's that. But, you know, apparently he said he wanted a team with a good coaching staff, a good offensive line, and a good defense. Well, maybe a good coaching staff, definitely no checkbox on the other two. And like I mentioned, with Russell Gage gone, they've got Kyle Pitts and like Chad Hansen.
Yeah.
As their top pass catchers there. So, you know, Cordero Patterson is still a free agent for this team. The Panthers, we know they've been desperate to get Deshaun. I totally buy the conspiracy theory that the Panthers re-signed Cam Newton, you know, to give kind of like a nice storybook and like wrap up on good terms with Cam, because Cam and Deshaun Watson are apparently close, and like, you know, make it a little like, hey, we didn't just kick Cam out the door and you know, whatever, back in 2020. We tried to make this thing right. I totally buy that theory that was all part of it. Like, I think they've just been obsessed with Deshaun Watson. And I feel like right now they're probably the team I expect, because he took the meeting with them first. Apparently he is in a position to waive his no trade clause to go to Carolina, even though he didn't want to do that a couple of years ago or a year ago. They're the team I think maybe ends up with him, which obviously, like you said, from a pure fantasy perspective, would be huge for the guys in that offense.
Yeah, this podcast probably won't age well, but that would be my guess too. It does seem like team ownership level, the Panthers are the most in, and they have been for a while now. It looks like they really want to make a big splash. They're ready to spend the money and go for it. But, and I saw someone else say this, but DJ Moore or Michael Thomas, either one is going to see their fantasy value, you know, shoot up 15 spots in the wide receiver rankings if he joins them. But yeah, that would be my guess too, is Carolina, but it seems pretty, you know, there's four teams at least in the mix right now.
Yeah, so 6 p.m. Eastern time, he is traded to the Cleveland Browns. That's what will happen, because we just talked about this on the podcast. Last piece of news here, Andrew Whitworth retired. It's a big loss for the Super Bowl champs, but they did re-sign Joseph Noteboom, who was their starting left tackle four times when Andrew Whitworth was injured. They're kind of banking on him being the guy to take the place of Andrew Whitworth. But, I mean, shout out to Andrew Whitworth, a great guy in the community here in Los Angeles, in the L.A. area ever since he signed here. It was really like the first big move of the Sean McVay era was to, okay, Jared Goff stunk as a rookie. Part of it was because the offensive line was terrible. Let's go get this guy who, you know, I listened to an interview, I think it was with Clint Bowling, I want to say, was the old Bengals guard leading up to this past year's Super Bowl, that like Andrew Whitworth, even when Clint Bowling, who hasn't played in the NFL for years back, was with Cincinnati next to Andrew Whitworth, was like, Whitworth's like, oh man, I don't know how much longer I'm going to do this. And he plays till he's 40, wins the Super Bowl against his own team. It's a hell of a way to go out.
You know, can't Aaron Donald also ride off into the sunset after the Super Bowl win?
He was hinting at it.
Come on. Losing the left tackle. Cam Akers is going to be a fascinating fantasy pick next year. Yeah. I was in as a first rounder last year before suffering his Achilles, and he made the miraculous comeback, but then was shut down. Yeah, but it was tough opponents. You know, who else do you trust there? So, yeah, another wrinkle there when examining Akers is, they're starting a new left tackle.
Yes, it's interesting there, too. We'll see. A lot of changes potentially on the horizon for the Rams, but this is the biggest one, I think. But again, for them to bring Noteboom back, I think was huge in potentially keeping some level of continuity. They also brought back Brian Allen, too, their starting center. So we shall see with the LA Rams. All right, let's move into some free agent signings. Again, mostly with the fantasy focus here. Some of these I'll lump together. Some of these will go one by one. Let's get the quarterbacks out of the way first. Surprisingly, just I think there's a lot of teams out there waiting for the Deshaun Watson domino to fall. Because the Jimmy G thing has been on hold.
I was
going to
say,
not too.
The Jimmy G domino.
I could see the angst
it's lukewarm,
on your face.
Harmon. It's lukewarm. And even right before we started recording, the Colts are now reportedly out. So I that was my one say. I thought Indy was in on them. Reportedly, they liked his character and whatnot. But it's an ice cold trade market for Jimmy G right now, reportedly.
Yes, absolutely. We'll see, though. Again, I think that his market will heat up once the Watson thing, which seems like it'll happen by maybe the end of the week. Although I still not to double back on the Watson thing, you know, part of me still is a little skeptical because it feels like insiders have been like, oh, this is imminent, you know, multiple times over the last, you know, year or so. And then another legal thing, comes up with the civil cases still being out there, you know, the suspension potentially hanging over. I don't know, but we'll see. Sounds like once that happens, though, we'll get the Jimmy G thing. But some of these teams, perfect example, the Pittsburgh Steelers. We thought they would be a good fit for Jimmy G. They end up getting Mitchell Trubisky for 2 years at not. You always know this, people. This is how the sausage is made out there. Dalton, you know this too. When the contract details for Mitchell Trubisky took forever to hit the internet, you know it's not great money. Like if it's just reported, like the Steelers get Mitchell Trubisky on a 2-year deal, and you're only here for several hours, the money. You know, it's like, it's fine. You didn't spend that much money. It's not that much money. It's like, basically, you're the favorite to win the starting job against Mason Rudolph and a rookie. But what was your reaction to the Trubisky thing going to Pittsburgh?
Makes sense for him to get an audition here. Uninspiring. I get the rookie class doesn't look great either. I don't have a strong take here whatsoever. I would guess that Pittsburgh gets similar production from their quarterback as they got from Ben Roethlisberger last year. I mean, he might even have a little bit more fantasy value because he runs a little more. Yeah. And it's not like a total death knell to Deontay Johnson. I say Mason Rudolph, I'd be more scared, or Dwayne Haskins if they went into the year. So I guess that's where I stand. But I mean, it's certainly not anything to get excited over.
Look, Trubisky, I feel like, because number one, he was drafted in the same draft class as Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. It also felt like only the Bears were convinced that was a good pick to make. And also because there's a weird like Chicago leaning, and I'm specifically even look at our media outlet here at Yahoo Sports, like our boss, Jason Klobaka, Bears fan, you know, Andy Behrens, Liz, like all these, there's a lot of weird, like there's a lot of Bears fans in football media specifically, it seems like. So the Bears get
Brad
talked
Evans
about a lot.
Was yeah,
Brad Evans as well. So again, like I think who knows with Brad. But you know, like the Bears thing gets beat, like the Trubisky thing kind of got like beat like a horse, and the fact that he was it just was a bad pick. But like I think he can be a guy that keeps the ship afloat. I don't think this is bad news at all. Like it could have been a lot worse for Deontay Johnson. The Chase Claypool thing, I'm still like, we'll see on Chase Claypool just in general. But for Johnson, like, this doesn't make me like worried any more than I would have been about Deontay Johnson. Like, you know, Allen Robinson caught 200 passes, mostly from Mitchell Trubisky from 2019 to 2020. Like, I think Trubisky could actually keep these boys afloat there in Pittsburgh more than, you know, some of these other goofballs could have on the free agent market.
Yeah, it took incredible volume for Big Ben these last couple years. 600 plus pass attempts. He got 6.3 YPA, 6.2 YPA. In today's NFL, that is pretty ugly.
Give me the over on Trubisky for both of those numbers, by the way.
I mean, they're going to probably get better production than the quarterback position. I take it back. Yeah, I mean, Roethlisberger last couple years was, that was not great. So 11 fumbles last year, 5 lost fumbles. Yeah, it wasn't great. So yeah, Trubisky might even be a small upgrade.
Roethlisberger's also kind of sneaky like Russell Wilson, that basically like every offensive coordinator that would come through Seattle would have this idea about what they were going to do with the offense, and then it just became the Russell Wilson offense. Like, you know, they got rid of Randy Fickner, they promote Matt Canada, who has like a totally different philosophy from what the Steelers were doing the last year of the Fickner offense, and then it just becomes the Ben Roethlisberger offense. It just like it's
He can mitigate. Sorry, he mitigated his low YPA, which is 13 sacks the year before, but then last year that went up to 38 sacks. So he was getting no yards per attempt, and being brought down too. So yeah, it wasn't great.
Yeah. So some of like the pre-snap motion, the play action, like, and the quarterback movement, which is a Trubisky thing and definitely not a Roethlisberger thing at this point. I think I actually think this could work out. And like, again, Trubisky's not going to come in there and blow the doors off and, you know, revitalize his career, but I think he could maybe keep the ship afloat in Pittsburgh better than some other places. Teddy Bridgewater is going to be the Miami Dolphins quote backup quarterback. Like, I love that every single insider that reported this made sure to say the words backup quarterback for Teddy Bridgewater. I feel like we're going to see Teddy Bridgewater maybe start a couple games, whether it's by injury or whether it's by, you know, performance for Tua. I feel like we'll see Teddy at some point in 2022, but nice insurance policy there for Teddy, and a guy who hasn't really played in the Shanahan style of system before. Actually, I think this is a pretty decent fit for him if he does have to play.
Yeah, especially with Tua's durability concerns, running all those RPOs too. So yeah, it's a nice backup. Nothing to move the needle in fantasy terms really here though.
No, not at all. All right, let's talk running backs here. There's only a few to talk. Let's lump in the Cardinals guys, because this was kind of the first domino to fall in the legal tampering period or whatever the hell we're calling it. Anyways, by the way, so great to get like two running back signings right off the bat. So I could hear everybody's opinion about the value of running backs that I haven't heard before. That was awesome. Great stuff, guys. Glad we're just playing the hits right at the start of the new league year. Chase Edmonds goes to the aforementioned Miami Dolphins on a 2-year deal. James Conner goes back to the Cardinals on a $7 million per year, 3-year deal. Which one of these do you want to take first?
James Conner, I might have moved too high. He always burns me when I'm in on him. He gets in. I know there's injury history there, but man, the Cardinals, that's back-to-back years. They're producing so many red zone carries and goal line carries. He's been a touchdown machine, and now the targets open up. It's really just health there for him, unless they bring in someone else. But as now, it's hard for me not to treat him as a top 15 fantasy back.
Yeah, and again, look, he had an awesome role when Chase Edmonds was hurt, because we know he can catch passes. Obviously, there's a durability concern, as you mentioned, but he was really good there last year. They're bringing back Zach Ertz too. Like, they're just kind of running back this these two veteran additions that they really kind of nailed last year in Ertz and Connor. They're banking on that production again. We'll see if that's a good plan for Arizona, but I like both of these guys, or, you know, coming back to Arizona for their fantasy value, both Zach Ertz and James Connor on that 3-year deal. Chase Edmonds going to Miami, though, this one happened right away. Your guy, Mike McDaniel, my question here to you, if he follows the Shanahan model, it does Mike McDaniel, Chase Edmonds will be what, like the number 3 running back on the Dolphins depth chart, because they made a big investment in him. Some 7th rounder is going for 1,200 yards in this offense. But anyways, reaction to it feels like the Dolphins are not done at the running back position. But I do like the signing here for Chase Edmonds, who I think is a pretty good player.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if Raheem Mostert doesn't end up either back in San Francisco or with Miami. He's been tied there. Seriously. And McDaniel, yeah, I mean, obviously that's his offensive mind is the running game. So you got to be excited, especially with not too many other options there on the depth chart right now. So Edmonds definitely a bump up his fantasy value, although Miami's offensive line problems remain there too. But yeah, it's great to see these guys split up, and Edmonds even going to a backfield that's wide open. So yeah, this is good news for fantasy managers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think.
Well, how are you taking Waddle? I have him ranked so stupid high. Like, I have him right with Mike Evans in half PPR. I mean, in full PPR, Waddle, I mean, is just a cheat code. I mean, what he did as a rookie. I mean, how high? I mean, that you have, it's about right. Yeah, he's a wide receiver one in fantasy.
I think so. I have him in my dynasty rankings, like wide receiver 8 or something too. I'm really, really high on him going forward. Great fit. Obviously, McDaniels gassed about him. He said he would draft him in fantasy. So that's a yes, sir, coach. No problem about it. We'll make sure to do that. But yeah, no, I think that it's wheels up for Waddle too. You know, Cedric Wilson, we talked about this. He goes to the Dolphins like on a 3-year deal. I mean, whatever, like it doesn't really move the needle for me. I think they'll probably make another wide receiver addition in the draft. But yeah, Waddle, I think. I hope that this move to this Chase Edmonds thing, because Edmonds obviously is like a little short area pass catcher out of the backfield. I hope that frees Jalen Waddle up to run even more downfield routes too. Like, you know, Debo last year was like leading the NFL in yards per catch at certain points because he was actually getting like deep route usage, despite the fact that if people think of him like in 2020, he was basically a glorified running back and out of the backfield, and then he actually does running back things. You know, Debo is a freak. That's a totally different discussion. But I think that we could use, like, the way they were getting Debo yards after the catch on deep targets would be awesome for Jalen Waddle. That would be awesome.
One final note on Miami. I forget who to attribute this tweet to, but they noted that McDaniel hated having non-blockers in their formation. Anyway, Gesicki, it's going to be hard for him to line up in the slot as often as he did last year. If McDaniel continues his style that he used in San Francisco. So that'll be interesting to see how he's employed.
Yes, and our producer, John, noted that Mike Gesicki, he did not engage himself in any of the Jimmy Graham arbitration stuff. He's just like, you know what? I'll just take the money. Let me just sign this franchise tender right now. Let me just go ahead and get that in there. So smart business move for Mike Gesicki, maybe, depending on how you feel about it. A couple other pass-catching options. J.D. McKissic goes to the Bills on a 2-year deal. The Patriots re-sign James White on a 2-year deal. I thought this might be the moment when White finally goes down there to Tampa. To join up with Tom Brady. Does not happen. By the way, since we've been recording, the Patriots traded Shaq Mason, guard, to Tampa Bay to reunite with Tom Brady. That's a pretty nice trade for Tampa Bay, who lost one guard to retirement, one guard in free agency to the Cincinnati Bengals. But, you know, sure, James White to the Patriots, that's fine. But J.D. McKissic, dude, I think this is interesting on a couple different fronts. Number one, give me your Antonio Gibson reaction to this piece of news.
Oh, yeah. Great news. I mean, just a year ago, we were all talking about how he played wide receiver in Memphis in college, and he's going to, you know, take over the role. McKissic has earned, I believe, the second highest target share among running backs behind only Kamara over the last 2 years. So he commands those targets. So it's great news for Gibson. And conversely, it's horrible news for my guy Singletary, who I've been pounding on the table, is ranked way too low and going too low in these early drafts, because this really hurt. I mean, they were, I think, third lowest target rate to running backs, Buffalo. And now McKissick's going to take all those. So that definitely hurts. I mean, Singletary was the number 5 fantasy back over the final 6 weeks, I think, and he quietly just became their workhorse down the stretch, including the playoffs. But now he definitely is losing those passing downs to McKissic.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see if Washington makes another free agent addition or another draft addition at the running back position. I think there are some whispers that they haven't quite been super happy with Antonio Gibson's play through this first couple years, but I'm still in on Antonio Gibson. I just want to see if they make like another pass catching type of addition. You know, he did play receiver in college, but playing receiver as a running back, playing versus receiver, and it's a very different transition. It sounds like he hasn't quite made that transition as much as they'd like to. But McKissic in Buffalo, I don't know that he's going to become some huge fantasy factor, but this is like a perfect fit. And I think McKissic like has juice. I think he's a good player. He's the perfect type of player that like fantasy managers just whine about and complain about and wish he didn't exist, but he does exist. And I think he's going to be a good addition for Buffalo. I think this helps their offense because of the style of play that their offense has as a pass first unit. And McKissic being an actually good like pass catching option will help a lot.
A full year of Dawson Knox. They brought Gabriel Davis snaps instead of Emmanuel Sanders' carcass. Yeah, they brought back Isaiah McKenzie. I like what Buffalo's doing. Josh Allen, it's going to be hard to not rank as everyone's number one fantasy QB again. So yeah, I love it. Yeah, this is a big help for the Bills. The Bills are absolutely they should probably be considered the favorites to win the Super Bowl, maybe.
I'm in on it. It sounds like Cole Beasley might be elsewhere as well. You know, they gave him permission to seek a trade, which usually means you're not coming back to this team. in particular. And McKenzie will be interesting as well if they do actually cut Cole Beasley. And I bet their team that I bet will draft a receiver, you know, maybe not crazy high, but in an area that we're talking about said receiver for the Buffalo Bills. All right. Speaking of receivers, let's talk receivers. We have a lot to discuss here. And we're already, 35 minutes in the podcast. Let's first talk about the big ticket item, which is strangely Christian Kirk. We'll talk both of the Jaguars signings here right off the bat. Christian Kirk, he gets a 4-year deal. It's up to, and up to is doing a hell of a lot of work when old Adam Schefter tweets out something, deletes it, then puts up to in the tweet. It's a 4-year deal up to 80 something million. Look, Christian Kirk ain't getting all that money. It's probably more like a 2-year, $37 million deal, which is still a lot for Christian Kirk. And it's a lot of money. I get it. But I will say this, Christian Kirk, the reason that, well, for, you know what, first, you react to this, and I'll shut up for a minute before I go on the Christian Kirk tangent, but what was your take when you saw the Kirk deal with the Jaguars?
It's an admittance of LaVisca Chenault experiment might be over. I mean, he had an ideal situation last year. I mean, with Etienne and Chark both going down, and he saw 100 targets from Trevor Lawrence, and it resulted in 0 touchdowns, but I don't know to make this seems like very, very expensive. Reports out now that the whole league is going crazy at Trent Baalke for giving out these deals. Some of these moves seem redundant. I'm not sure exactly what's happening here. You're the wide receiver whisperer. You tell me.
So, okay. Like you said, the contract is the eye popping number. Number one, it's Jacksonville. They've got to pay people to come down there.
Fair. That's fair.
So there's that now, but Christian Kirk though, I said before when there were reports that he was going to get like $15 million a year, which he, blew past that. I was like, this makes sense because this is how free agency works. He's young, he's healthy, which you cannot say about the other good receivers coming in, and he's coming off a nice year. You know, like, do I think Allen Robinson is a better player than Christian Kirk? Like, duh. Yeah, I do think that. Is Michael Gallup, is he a better player than Christian Kirk? Yeah, probably. I think he's a better player than Christian Kirk. But these guys are coming off injury-plagued years. Robinson's coming off a down year. When young guys, they're hitting the market at the right time, they get paid, and, like, bad teams got to come pay him to come down there. And I will say this, too. Like, Christian Kirk is a vertical slot option. You mentioned LaVisca Chenault. LaVisca Chenault can't get open. I mean, he can't get open versus man coverage. He can't get open versus zone coverage. Kirk is definitely much more of LaVisca Chenault's just not even really like a receiver at this point. Christian Kirk is a vertical slot option who can rip open zone coverage and who can make plays at the catch point. That is what Trevor Lawrence needed. Like, he needed a player like this so badly. This offense would have killed for a player like Christian Kirk last year, even if you think Christian Kirk is like maybe a low end 2, high end 3. It was a huge area of need. So despite the fact they overpaid, I actually think Christian Kirk is going to be a really, really good addition for them because it was something the exact type of player that they needed. And I think he and Trevor Lawrence, like, Lawrence loves to throw those vertical seam balls. And now he actually has a good player on the other end of those targets. Mm-hmm.
Couple things I'll add. Derek Carr is getting his deep guys paid. Aguilar last offseason and now Zay Jones. And last year, I know there's a new head coach, but Jacksonville, I believe they gave up decent capital for Dan Arnold, and now they sign Evan Ingram. I mean, did we mention that one too? So,
no, yeah.
I don't know what Baalke's doing there. I don't know, man. It's not encouraging for so far, the year two for Lawrence. But Christian Kirk may help. I mean, I'm not going to, whatever. You got to spend the money to go to Jacksonville, and you're happy. I mean, no one else can go there. Sure, I'm not going to fault you for that.
And I think the Evan Ingram signing is not bad either. You know, it's a 1-year deal. I know. I get it. But Ingram's at least had his moments. I know Giants fans hate him because he has these like gut wrenching drops in crucial moments. But, you know, he's the type of, I mean, come on, man. Jason Garrett had this guy like playing Jason Witten's role with the little hitches, you know, coming off like inline tight end. Doug Peterson, you know, has made good use of tight ends in the past. Zach Ertz, you know, who's like a pure slot receiver type. I mean, I don't know how the freaking Jags have added like so many slot receivers. It doesn't really make a lot of sense in that regard. So as much as I like the Kirk signing, I could understand the Ingram signing. The Zay Jones thing, bro. I mean, that one threw me for a loop. Like, guy is, it wasn't 500 something yards last year, his career high. I mean, he was awful in Buffalo, made himself a decent player for the Raiders. Derek Carr really has actually said a lot of good things about Zay Jones, but 3 years, $24 million, like up to $30 million, I think, as well. That one was surprising. And apparently Trent Baalke, the piece de resistance of his entire career here, is everybody said, all the insiders said too, that this has basically screwed up the wide receiver market, because there's so many guys out there like Robinson, several others, who are, you know, they see these deals for Christian Kirk and they're like, hello, this is what I want. Zay Jones, like, you know, if you're Marquez Valdes-Scantling, you got to be like, all right, give me the Zay Jones deal, man. But like, so apparently it's slowed down the entire wide receiver market here, because from the time Kirk signed, you know, we had the Cedric Wilson contract and then the Russell Gage contract, and that's it. And I don't even know how much, we don't even know how much money Russell Gage got. So shout out to Trent Baalke for screwing up the entire free agency period here.
Yeah, I think Zay Jones' first 100-yard game of his career was week 17 last season. And yeah, it is funny to hear agents are like, just ignore whatever Jacksonville's doing. But yeah, you won't hear me defending Trent Baalke, that's for sure.
Well, agents are like, no, look at what Jacksonville's doing and let us get some of that.
Oh, teams are saying, yeah, my bad, I got that backward. My fault.
Teams are bringing out,
that's exhibit A. I'm sorry, that's what they're bringing up to the table is what Jacksonville's saying. My bad. Yes, the teams are saying, please just ignore that.
All the talk during like the head coaching cycle was that nobody wanted to work with Trent Baalke and nobody likes Trent Baalke. Well, let me tell you what, boy, he's not going to have Christian Kirk is Trent Baalke's only friend. Him, Zay Jones, and Christian Kirk can all hang out, because nobody else is going to want to hang out with Trent Baalke at the league meetings or whatever after this whole thing. I lied. We did have another receiver signing between Kirk and Russell Gage. It was DJ Chark to the Lions on a one-year deal from the aforementioned Jacksonville Jaguars. There was no chance Chark was coming back to the Jags. That bridge was burned. What was your reaction to the Chark signing?
Yeah, how much does this affect Amon-Ra St. Brown? And then there's big splits with St. Brown and Hawkinson to look at too, but he was so, so good and just so historically impressive what he did as a rookie with, you know, mediocre quarterback. In PPR, you still got to rank him aggressively despite the addition of Shark here. But yeah, whatever, it's fine. Good, whatever. I mean, do you have a strong thoughts on him? A take.
So for DJ Chark specifically, I like the move for the Lions. It's a 1 year. I think it's like $12 million.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
Totally fine deal. Right. I'll say this, though, about Chark. His first three games last year were terrible, you know, even before he got hurt. Like, he was not playing well. His 2020 season, again, I know there were a lot of injuries there. Not a good year. I remember coming out of 2019 and be like, oh, man, DJ Chark. Like, he's, you know, you watch him play, and he's looking good. Like, he was separating. He was winning at the catch point. He was getting down the field. But, again, 2020, terrible year. The start to last year, like, I mean, he caught 7 passes and was getting targeted a lot. And there's a reason for that. Like, sometimes there's noise in catch rate and stuff like that. Yeah, that it was bad. The first 3 games for DJ Chark were really, really, really bad. So it's a risk for the Lions, but it is the type of player that they need, right? They needed, you know, kind of that vertical stretch guy. They did bring back Josh Reynolds, who's, you know, a Jared Goff guy. They played together at the Rams. He had some moments for the Lions last year, but this is basically just taking, like, last year, their 3 receiver set kind of towards the end of the year was Reynolds as the Z, Amon-Ra St. Brown as the Z slot guy, and then like Khalif Raymond, or, you know, and now they're just going to take Raymond out of there and put, you know, DJ Chark in, which theoretically should be an upgrade. But I'll tell you what, I'm still in on Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think the guy's legit good. I know that sometimes like splits just happen, you know, and I think you've seen rookie receivers take that like kind of upward trajectory. And you know, despite the fact that these are like, look, well, he's not going to have like a 30%+ target share next year. I don't think anybody's arguing that, but the role that he's in, you know, I keep calling him Bud Light Cooper Kupp. I've been calling him that since before he was drafted by the Lions and, you know, the team that has Jared Goff at quarterback. I think this is just such a natural fit between Goff and Amon-Ra St. Brown that, like, the Chark thing doesn't make me move Amon-Ra St. Brown at all, because I was assumed they would get an X receiver in there. And, you know, now it's Chark and not like a promising rookie, although they still might draft a guy.
Yeah, maybe even helps clear the underneath stuff by run and go routes or whatever. Chark, oh, yeah, a deep guy. So, yeah, maybe the turf should help him too. So Goff proved plenty competent enough in my eyes last year, so I'm still in on St. Brown. But he's definitely going to be an interesting guy to see how fantasy managers rank him and draft him, you know, because of the addition of Chark and Hawkinson's return, and just, you know, his second half was just so incredible.
Yeah, and look, if you look at the Lions offense right now, like you said, Jared Goff is not like a franchise quarterback. I don't think he's anybody's idea of a solution, but he's behind a good offensive line. They've made some really nice picks there. DeAndre Swift, we all believe to be a really talented running back. Jamal Williams is still in the backfield as well. Hockenson is an up-and-coming tight end. St. Brown is such a good receiver there. You know, DJ Chark now with Josh Reynolds. Like, you squint at it, this kind of has the makings of a pretty good offense and, you know, still should be a defense that's fallen behind all the time. You know, the Lions had their moments last year as a fun offense. I think they could really be a fun offense this year for fantasy, like a sneaky value offense.
Yeah. Dan Campbell, I can't believe I'm saying it, but I think he's a good coach. I mean,
who paid
close attention to Lions games and ultimately knocked me out of my big survivor pool. The guy was incredibly aggressive on fourth down and would do onside kicks. And just, I watched that he had those teams prepared that were, you know, with injuries. I mean, really, honestly, I was impressed with Dan Campbell. And Detroit's going to be a team that is not on a weekly pushover.
No, completely agree. I think they'll be a hard out. And they're just a really fun team right now. And the fact that Dan Campbell taking over play calling duties, they elevated offensive coordinator too to take over for Anthony Lynn, who will be involved with the whole thing. I can't remember the guy's name right now. But this all kind of coincided with St. Brown's rise to prominence. Like, I don't know, man. You know, he's not like freaking Darius Slayton or something like that pops up for a couple good games as a day three draft pick. Like, he became the core function of their offense. Ben Johnson, by the way, Lions offensive coordinator, whose name I forgot. Thank you, producer John, for that one. But yeah, like this was the core identity of their offense. I think he is still a guy that I'm going to be 100% in on, you know, as long as he's not going to go crazy, crazy high, which I don't think he will in drafts this coming year.
Yeah, I'm trying to see what his ECR is. Right now it is, oh, that's crazy. No, it says it's 30, but I have him 20. 30 seems pretty low.
30 is crazy low. Yeah, I think 20 is much more. Somewhere between, like, 20 feels perfect. Because I think he has upside to outkick that. And there's obviously some target risk there as well.
Okay, who do you like him more, our guy Elijah Moore?
Great transition, because I was just going to talk about Elijah Moore because Braxton Berrios is back with the Jets on a two-year deal. Braxton Berrios, like, Jets fans love this guy. He's like a great special teamer and just good enough as a slot receiver. And this, I think, cements Elijah Moore. I keep seeing people talk about the Jets maybe draft a receiver, and they could, right? Because the depth there is not great. But like, if they run out Moore as their one, and I think Moore is a one, by the way, that's a really hard question between St. Brown and Elijah Moore. I think I know I have Elijah Moore higher in my dynasty rankings. I know I'm higher on him as a player. Situationally, it's like, I think St. Brown is probably, they're like very different players. I'm going to cop out here and say, like, get you St. Brown for a floor and Elijah Moore for the weekly ceiling. You know, like, I think they're kind of those type of players, but yeah, I probably will say Elijah Moore. But anyways, I think this signing was good for Elijah Moore, who is going to be, I think, cemented as an outside receiver, which is, he can win outside. That's proven at this point. And then Corey Davis is like kind of the two. And then they have Berrios as a slot guy. And they signed CJ Uzoma at tight end there for the Jets as well.
Yeah. So I have Moore one spot ahead. So at least we're you agree that they're very close. I'm so in on Moore, but I was curious about this Berrios addition being a problem, because that guy is a target machine. I mean, even before last year, whenever he'd get a chance to start, he would get a lot of targets. I mean, I know it sounds funny, but if he's manning the slot, I know that Moore can play both the slot and outside. A lot of comps to Antonio Brown. So I was kind of worried about, I liked Jamison Crowder leaving and having Moore have that slot open. But with Berrios, you still think it's totally fine and Moore is going to get to the outside. I mean, we haven't even got to the whole Zach Wilson problem, but I'm just so in on Moore's talent. I'm just so in on Elijah.
Yeah, and I think they're putting together pieces that'll actually help Zach Wilson in this offense in the second year. You know, CJ Uzoma as the tight end, or Uzama as the tight end, as opposed to, you know, what they were running out last year. That's a big difference maker. They signed Laken Tomlinson from the 49ers. That's a good guard for them to bring in, along with Elijah Vera Tucker, who they drafted last year. It's just the Mekhi Becton thing at this point. Is he actually going to be their left tackle? Like, is he actually going to play? There's that whole
Tevin
thing.
Coleman. Don't forget Tevin Coleman resigned, but huge.
And Michael Carter in the backfield. Yeah, Tevin Coleman. I mean, that's Carter, good news.
In all seriousness, Carter. Yeah, in all seriousness. Exactly. Yes. In all seriousness, Carter did look good, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. They've got the makings of a good offense around Zach Wilson. And again, I think they might draft a receiver, you know, high round two, round three, something like that. Kind of Corey Davis insurance, because he was banged up a lot last year. I mean, Moore was also injured at times last year too. So I think they could probably use some depth there, but I think it's good news for Elijah Moore there. All right, let's run through some of these tight end signings. We talked about CJ Uzomah already. I don't think he's a guy I'm going to be like super excited to draft, but it's probably a good signing for the Jets. We talked about Gesicki back on the franchise tag. Mo'Ali Cox, the pride of VCU, baby, one of the most giant human beings on planet Earth, is back with the Colts. I'm so excited to like keep that candle lit for old Mo'Ali Cox, again, the pride of Virginia Commonwealth University. And then he's never going to do anything. He's going to get like one. He's going to have like a massive touchdown in one game, and then he's going to get, you know, zero targets for like three straight games after that.
I don't know. Jack Doyle rules retired. And as someone corrected me when I said Kyle Pitts is the longest wingspan in the NFL, apparently Mo'Ali Cox is the longest wingspan in NFL history. So yes, you weren't kidding when you said he's big.
Former
so,
basketball player.
Let's give him an opportunity. Some targets. Yeah, but obviously a big question there is who's going to be playing quarterback position in Indy.
Yeah, who the hell knows what's going on there at the quarterback position? Hey, who the hell knows what's going on in Seattle? As much as like the Zay Jones contract was weird, the Christian Kirk contract was wild, Will Disley gets 3 years, $24 million, when they just traded for Noah Fant. Bro, Dalton, help me out with the Seahawks here. What the hell's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing Gerald Everett is a free agent, but that is bizarre. Making a big deal for Noah Fant and then bringing in Disley does not make sense. Fantasy managers don't love it. Yeah, and obviously not having Russell Wilson as the QB there too. I'm still curious in Seattle just what's going to happen with Rashad Penny. But yeah, it's an odd one in the tight end there to bring in Disley along with Fant.
Yeah, I forgot about Rashad Penny there as well. Yeah, no, I mean, geez, good God. The Seahawks, I know I took this off the outline and now I'm going to talk about it, but it was pretty funny to me to see Colin Kaepernick being like, hey, I'm looking for some pro. I really miss pro. I'm working out. I'm staying ready, but I really miss throwing to pro receivers. And Tyler Lockett, you know, as he's looking like, I got to play with Drew Lock this year. Let me at least go like catch passes. 20 minutes that tweets up, Tyler Lockett gets in there and he works out with Colin Kaepernick. So yeah, it's weird times in Seattle, man. It is weird. I don't know what's going on there. I don't really know the direction of the team, because they're kind of throwing money around in free agency too.
So I'm kind of weirdly, tell me how crazy I am. I've decided I haven't moved DK Metcalf down after thinking about it. So I know Russell Wilson is always among the league leaders with Brady with those end zone targets. And obviously it's a downgrade, don't get me wrong. But my thinking is he was playing injured last year. He scored, 15 touchdowns the year before. He's just such a baller there. And Drew Lock is aggressive. He throws the ball downfield, and he's going to be worse. Guess what that means? The team's going to be worse. So they can't run the ball as much as Carroll wants. So I don't know. I weirdly see Lock. They won't be nearly as efficient, but I could see this like more targets and DK Metcalf weirdly being similar fantasy value. Am I crazy?
I think if they take a rookie, I just did.
Oh, all bets are off there. Yeah. Okay. So do you think Drew Lock is that bad? Okay. I could be. That's why. Yeah. So yeah. Okay. That's totally possible.
But I get your point though about the fact that Drew Lock is aggressive, and like, you know, Cortland Sutton actually had a pretty decent season.
Oh yeah,
with like Joe Flacco.
He goes downfield
and
too. He goes
yeah.
A dots high. He throws downfield. Yeah. He's aggressive.
So yeah, there are some times when he was just like absurd in terms of percentage of passes going 20 plus yards, like 40%+ of his passes going 20 plus yards with Drew Lock. So I understand that. Obviously,
hey, the best thing for your fantasy receiver is a pick six. You're down another 7 points.
That's
ball
true.
Ball right back. You know, you're down 7 points. I have to throw. So yeah, I don't know. I'm talking myself into this, but we'll see. Maybe it's off base.
I'm pretty scarred last year from like Allen Robinson, from Terry McLaurin, these guys that I think are ballers, yep. And then they just mm-hmm. go into like horrific, yeah, not just like quarterback situation, but horrific offensive situations, like the ecosystem
totally
as a whole, trash. I kind of feel like Seattle could be trending that direction. And like, I love Metcalf. I love Tyler Lockett. Everybody knows I love Tyler Lockett, but like, I just don't know that I'm ever, with all the receiver options, like, even if they're at a big value, I just don't know that I'm ever going to like comfortably click that guy, you know?
Now, dude, that's a good point. I mean, I'm out on McLaurin, even though I'm with you that I love him in real life, but until they upgrade the quarterback position, I don't think Carson Wentz counts. So yeah, I'm talking out of both sides here because yeah, I'm trying to, maybe I'm just, in my one best ball, I did grab Metcalf in round three before the trade. So I may be trying to reason there. But no, honestly, I actually do feel that. I do think there's a possibility that Seattle just forced to throw the ball more, and it's ugly, but it just gets a bunch of targets for Metcalf.
Definitely. It's potentially true. Couple other kind of cleanup notes here before we get out of here, because we've covered a lot here on the show. Brandon Scherff went to the Jaguars as well in their big free agent signing. I know there's some folks that are kind of worried about Brandon Scherff's health, but he's an awesome guard. If he's healthy, that should be a huge addition for Trevor Lawrence. A couple other running back or offensive line notes. James Daniel went to the Steelers on a really nice 3-year, $26.5 million deal. Steelers could look pretty good there. I talked about Laken Tomlinson goes from the 49ers to the Jets. Alex Kappa, one of the couple Bengals free agent signings at guard, and then center Ted Karras they brought in as well. He could play guard too. So Roger Saffold also leaves Tennessee to go to the Buffalo Bills. Ben Jones stays in Tennessee. Connor Williams started 31 games or multiple games, more than that, for the Dallas Cowboys. And he goes to the Miami Dolphins on a 2-year, $14 million deal. So the Dolphins definitely trying to get Tua some help. The Jaguars definitely trying to get Trevor Lawrence some help. I don't know if the Jags are neither of these teams, I think, are done yet, though, is basically the way to look at it.
Travis Etienne remains a very interesting draft prospect this year, coming back with all those additions that you mentioned, but none to the backfield. And then just to finish with the Niners, Tomlinson being replaced at left guard is interesting. Not only did the Niners redshirt their first round pick, Trey Lance, they redshirted their second round pick, Aaron Banks, last year. Big guy out of Notre Dame. They're talking positive. They think they'll replace him right there, Tomlinson, left guard, but we'll see. It's pretty odd to just basically redshirt your first two round picks and then expect them to be the starters right away. Or two, so we'll see what happens there.
49ers are such an interesting team. There was the speculation that Brady was going to come there, and then there was a report from a person I'm not going to name. Someone reported that Deshaun Watson was meeting with the 49ers, and then my entire timeline, everybody yes. else is like, not true. Nope, not
the most
true.
Adamant, vehement denial you'll see a team
I've
make.
Ever
yes.
seen. I've
yes.
ever seen. My entire timeline, literally like, no, that's not happening. So can't wait to see how that one unfolds. And last item we'll discuss here, again, seriously, before we leave. And I'm sneaking this in at the end of the show because I love the way that the Vikings snuck in the Kirk Cousins like extension or whatever. It's like, hey, this Brady story, pretty crazy, can't believe he's coming back. By the way, we're extending Kirk Cousins for another couple years. It's mostly to lower cap, but it sounds like this does cement Kirk Cousins 2022 starter for the Minnesota Vikings, which is great news for Justin Jefferson and everybody else there.
Jefferson in this Cooper Kupp role is going to be sick. I mean, the coach is already saying he's putting him in there, so I can't wait for it. Yeah, good news for him for sure.
Yeah, Vikings fans might be pissed about it, but I do think it makes some sense. Like, you know, what are you going to do? Like, you would blow the whole thing up, I guess, if you got rid of Kirk Cousins. But he could be traded next offseason, but it's not going to happen this year. So that is that. All right, that is going to do it for this episode. Action-packed with a ton of free agent news items. As I mentioned, we're just wrapping up here at 5 p.m. Eastern. So anything that happens after that, you're on your own. We'll talk about it next show, which will be Liz and Scott on Thursday to catch you up on all of the news as it breaks in the next couple of days. In the meantime, Twitter. It's an app where you can hear about things as they're happening in real time. And while you're there, you can follow me at @MattHarmon_BYB. I'm actually trying to tweet a little bit more, trying to engage with you people out there. Dalton, I don't know if you could say the same for him, but he is at Dalton Del Don. And while you're there, of course, make sure you're following @YahooFantasy. Until then, we're out.